Thanks for the invitation to come. Thanks to Kevin, even though he's not here. So I'll be speaking about, well, representations of truncated shifted Jungians. So I'll tell you what these algebras are. And I'll tell you what this has to do with symplectic duality, since I guess that's the topic of this seminar. Okay, so let's begin. Let's start with G as a simply laced semi-simple group. So it could be SLN or SO2N. And then we have the affine Grassmannian of G. So it's G of the Laurent series divided by G of the power series. And so this is a moduli space for principal G bundles. On P1 with the trivialization away from zero. So you take this algebraic group G, and you take its points over the field of the Laurent series. So maybe more intuitively, if G is like SLN, this just means n by n matrices over this field with determinant 1. And this would mean n by n matrices. Okay, so yeah, so this is the moduli space of a pairs P comma phi, like this. So P is the vector bundle, and phi is the trivialization, or the G bundle. Phi is the trivialization. So then we're interested in these things called Gur lambda. These are the orbits of, in fact, I'll shorten my notation to drop the C, just like this. This means the same thing as this. So the orbit of this group through the point T lambda. So here, lambda is in X plus. This is the dominant coweights of G. T lambda is a corresponding element in the affine Grassmannian of G. And we have, and okay. So from this moduli point of view, we can describe this Gur lambda. More precisely, we can describe Gur lambda bar as being the set of pairs P phi like this, such that P phi has Hecke type less than or equal to lambda. And what that means is that this thing means for each representation V lambda check of G. So here lambda check is a dominant weight of G. This is irreducible representation of G. So we have an associated vector bundle V P lambda check. So that's the associated vector bundle. So the statement is that for each irrep, this trivialization away from zero extends over zero to a map from this thing to this. So here we have the trivial vector bundle with fiber, this vector space. And then we allow poles at zero of order lambda check, lambda zero. Okay, so this is a modular description of this Gur lambda bar. And one reason why I'm mentioning this is because this is actually not quite a true statement. In fact, this is a conjecture. So it's known that on the level of C points they're the same, but it's not known that this is actually an isomorphism of schemes. So
you say lambda check lambda?
Zero. So
at the origin.
Yeah, at the origin. Zero, zero the point in P1.
I think but this is a polynomial of order.
Yeah.
Matrix of polynomial of order. Lambda check lambda.
Yeah, you can think this trivialization So it doesn't extend over 0, has poles, but the pole there is at most this order.
Maybe I could call it infinity instead of 0. I just think about it as a polynomial matrix in this representation.
Yeah. Well, maybe the simplest would be if you took, say, G to be GL2. Well, it's not quite in my setup, but let's just pretend for a second. Then this principle G bundles is just vector bundles, rank 2 vector bundles. So I have rank 2 vector bundles. V, and this Heckett type N, or less than or equal to N, would be that this V, I call this vector bundle script DV, this V embeds into C2, where I allow a pole of order N and 0. Okay? So this. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Thanks. Okay, so that's so.
So phi, the trivialization does not intervene in the definition.
This is the map. This is phi.
Oh, this is phi.
Yeah. Okay, it's an isomorphism away from 0 and over 0, and near 0. Okay, great. So that's my. That's my Gros lambda bar. Yeah, so Gros lambda bar is a projective variety, a finite dimensional projective variety, singular projective variety. So it's my schematic picture of Gros lambda bar. And it contains different points, T mu, for various mu. So this mu could be something smaller than lambda, also dominant colloid. And now, so it, in fact, in particular, Gros lambda bar is actually the union over mu less than or equal to lambda of these Gros mu's. Okay, so it has these different strata. And now we're going to find this slice to this data, to this point, which I call Gros lambda mu. That's what we're about to define. So I first define. So I have my G over Lorentz series. And inside of it, I can take negative loops, G over polynomials and T inverse. And this thing, I have an evaluation map to G at T equals infinity. And the kernel of this evaluation map is called G1 T inverse. So that's the kernel of this map. And now I define Gur little mu, Gur sub mu, to be the G1 T inverse orbit for T mu. And I define Gur lambda mu to be Gur lambda bar intersect Gur sub mu. So schematically, you can picture like this. So here, I mean, just a sort of some facts about this thing. Is this Gur lambda mu is an affine Poisson variety. It has dimension. It's given by, you take this lambda minus mu and evaluate it on rho. So maybe I'll write this maybe slightly differently. Sum mi ii. So if lambda minus mu is the sum of mi alpha I check. Okay. This fact that mu is smaller than lambda, that precisely means their difference can be written as a sum, positive sum of simple coroots. And these coefficients, the sum of their coefficients is the dimension of this. Sorry, twice. Okay, and it has finely many, so it's Poisson, and it has finely many symplectic leaves. And it sometimes admits a symplectic resolution and sometimes doesn't. But you can precisely say when, although it's a tiny bit complicated, so I won't exactly write it down, but sometimes it has a symplectic resolution. But you could say usually not. So one, a sufficient but not necessary condition is that lambda is a sum of minuscule coweights. Minuscule dominant coweights. So if lambda is a sum of minuscule dominant coweights, then it does admit a symplectic resolution, and that's almost the only case in which it is. So for example, in if G is SLN, then it does have a symplectic resolution. Maybe I'll just say that more. And more generally, if G is equal to SLN, then you can sort of describe this Gödel lambda mu sort of in ordinary linear algebra terms. Gödel lambda mu can be described as a certain variety of matrices. Matrices, more precisely, it's the intersection of a nilpotent orbit closure with a solid away slice. But that part's pretty specific to SLN. Great. Okay, so since we have an affine Poisson variety, it's natural to look for a quantization. Quantization. So quantization, in my sense.
Sorry,
yeah.
Do you have an interesting description of that intersection in terms of what happens to the bundle?
Yeah, I probably should have said that. This thanks. This Gur mu guy here is precisely the locus of these pairs P phi, such that P has isomorphism type mu and some condition at infinity on the flag at infinity. Just ignore the second thing for a second. Let me just explain this. So principal G bundles on P1 are completely, their isomorphism types are characterized by the dominant coweights of G. For example, if you have vector bundle, every vector bundle on P1 is isomorphic to a direct sum of line bundles. Every line bundle of P1 is O of n for some n. So that gives you a bunch of integers. And that's the same kind of information for any semisimple group as this mu. So this is just a locus where this P has a fixed isomorphism type, plus a small condition about this flag and infinity. I don't want to bother saying that. That's sort of the difference between these two groups.
Not at zero.
I really mean infinity. Yeah, thank you. I should have mentioned that before. Okay, so we're interested in quantization. So that means we want an algebra A, a graded, filtered non-commutative algebra, such that the associated graded of this algebra should be isomorphic to the coordinate ring of Gödel lambda mu. So because Gödel lambda mu is an affine Poisson variety, its coordinate ring will be a Poisson algebra. And we want this isomorphism to be an isomorphism of Poisson algebras.
Also probably want to say what the grading is.
That's true too. So the this thing is also a graded ring, where the grading comes from an action of C star. C star on Gödel lambda mu using simplest way to say it is just using the fact that C star acts on P1 fixing 0. So C star will act on Gr lambda mu. Or if you like this description of it with this T, it's just acting on the variable T. So the algebra which we're going to introduce to quantize this variety is called the truncated shifted Yangian. So I'm not going to exactly define it, but I'll tell you something about it. So there's this algebra Y called the Yangian of G. And Y has generators labeled EIS, HIS, FIS. So here I ranges over I, the vertices of the Dynkin diagram of G, and S is an integer bigger than 0. So these should be thought of as kind of like your usual kind of standard Chevalier generators of the algebra, but there's this extra S parameter. And then we define, so there'll be a kind of two-step procedure for obtaining our quantization, which is kind of, will be analogous to going first to Gr mu and then to Gr lambda mu. So maybe I'll just define Y mu to be the subalgebra generated by some guys. So I only take some of the EIs. How many of them I take depends on mu, and I take all the H's and the F's. And then I define some other elements AIS. Oh, sorry. One second. Let me draw a schematic too, so you see what's going on. So we have, from the definition, there's a map. There's a G1 T inverse group. It maps to Gr mu because this Gr mu is an orbit of this group. And then this Gr mu has a subvariety, which is Gr lambda mu. So on the level of coordinate rings, everything gets reversed. The coordinate ring of Gr mu is a subalgebra of the coordinate ring of G1T inverse. And the coordinate ring of Gr lambda mu is a quotient of the coordinate ring of Gr mu. So what we're going to do now is, on this quantized level, this diagram is going to be replaced by Y, this Y mu, which I just defined, and then some guy here, which is my main guy of interest, this Y lambda mu. And Y lambda mu, was going to be our quantization, is going to depend on some parameters, which are kind of important in theory. So let me introduce these parameters. So let R be a sequence Ri, where each Ri is a multiset of complex numbers. So it means it's a subset of C, but you're allowed to have the same thing number twice, or more than twice. A multiset of complex numbers of size Mi. Okay, so this R should be thought of as these parameters, and then from R, so using R, we define some new elements. AIS, which live in the subalgebra of the Yangian generated by all these HISs, but I mean, this maybe you should write H, J, R, something. I mean, they're not the same, this is the same. So in the subalgebra of this Cartan part, we define some new elements, AIS, whose definition depends on R. And then we define a Y lambda mu R to be the quotient of Y mu by the two-sided ideal generated by all AIS for S greater than MI. Okay, so that's and this guy called truncated shifted Yangian. This one is called the shifted Yangian, and this is called truncated shifted Yangian.
What did lambda
enter? So remember that this basic, I entered two places.
Ah, so you're like, in my
study.
Yeah, I actually made a mistake right here. This was the answer here, because this mi is coming from the difference of lambda mu.
Yes.
But I actually made a mistake right here. This set of parameters, it doesn't have size mi. It has the sizes are what I'll call lambda I, where lambda is a sum of lambda I omega I. So it also enters into how many parameters you have. So here's a theorem. So the first part of the theorem is that this associated gradient of this y mu is isomorphic to the coordinate ring of Gur mu, again, as graded, it's graded Poisson algebras. And then I would like to say that the associated gradient of this y lambda mu r for any r is isomorphic to the coordinate ring of this Gur lambda mu. But it's not quite true. Well, it hopefully is true, but so this the isomorphism is a conjecture. We've constructed a map which is surjective, and the kernel only consists of nilpotent things. So it's possible that there's some nilpotent stuff here. On the other hand, there was this previous conjecture about this modular description of Gur lambda bar, which is a very natural conjecture. And that conjecture, if true, it actually implies this conjecture. Okay, so I'm just saying there's very good reason to think that this thing actually is a quantization. So let's ignore the fact that it's just a conjecture for now. Okay. One last point is that, so in all this, what I've been talking about, mu was dominant. So remember, lambda was some dominant coweight. And mu was also a dominant, but it's natural to try to extend the theory to where mu is just any coweight. And well, first of all, for the space, there is a kind of the definition of the space which basically appears in the paper, your paper. So, but not quite in a mathematical language, but it would be this if you wrote it in a mathematical language. So it would be, I'll just write it. So you take this and intersect with this. So it looks a little complicated. And this intersection is taking place inside, not inside the affine Grassmannian, but inside this space like this. So this is in this work of Bullimore, Demopte, and Gauto under the name moduli space of singular monopoles.
And actually, maybe it's good to note that if lambda is actually equal to zero, then we get that you're just a space of monopoles.
Yeah. And moreover, for any lambda and mu, there's sort of a description of it kind of like this G bundles description. I won't try to write it down exactly, but it's principal G bundles on P1 with a trivialization away from zero and a B structure. And some data. I mean some conditions about this data. And these algebras, y lambda mu, they generalize actually nicely to the case when mu is dominant, although similarly they're no longer sort of subquotients of this Yang-Yin. Like this picture doesn't generalize, but still this thing still generalizes, but it's not a subalgebra of y. This thing can be defined for any mu, and this thing can be defined for any mu. Maybe you'll see why in a few minutes, why I want to do that. Okay. So I'll show that also. But actually, we don't know that much about it in, for arbitrary mu. For example, the analog of the theorem, I don't know how to prove yet for arbitrary mu.
Which, so the, which definition extends for every mu? The whole definition or only this definition?
This y lambda mu?
Yes.
So none of it exactly. There's some y mu which is defined a little differently. And then y lambda mu. I mean, it's not very hard to guess what it is.
No, you mean the y, sorry.
Yeah.
Think about the gr lambda.
The gr lambda for arbitrary mu, I would define it like this.
Okay.
I mean, like you did.
Or the other definition only applies to the...
Only applies to the case when mu is dominant. And similarly, this y lambda mu, it's kind of a... It's not so different, but it doesn't appear as a subalgebra of the Yang.
When mu is dominant, it's also a Hamming style. So, like, instantaneous, some variance. There's also some...
No, we're right, when we start, we can say that we can take instantons on R4, essentially,
yes.
And then they take frame instantons. So then we define an action of C star there, which depends on mu.
Yes.
Gives it action on heat. Yeah. And then we take the fixed points and the fixed point points and connect components which correspond to the lambda, which is the action at zero.
Yes.
And then this fixed points is exactly that.
Is that description useful for quantization?
No. I'm not sure because for this, I mean, if you knew how to quantize instantons on R4, that would be useful. But
it's a negation construction, right? Well, no, sorry. Like, well, if the group is.
No, for type A, yes, you can do it. But there's like an analog OEDHM construction up here for type A as well, because for type A, all these varieties are actually group varieties.
Yes.
Which define. So the more space constants are doing, and a fine group variety is fine.
I guess it's also quite, is it easy to see that the quantization that you get from the synthetic portion is the same as the one that you get from? This gives the Y.
Not on the level, no.
You mean like type A when it's the
same?
I don't think it's easy, no.
It's
well, there's actually, in type A you may say there's three sort of approaches, because one, you can think of it in this fashion,
yes.
Or you can think of it in this curve variety way, or you can think of it like this. In this way, the quantization you get is this W algebra, or parabolic W algebra,
yes.
Related to that. And the fact that that's the same as these truncated shifted Yangians, that was proven by Brennan and Kleshev.
But that's not obvious.
But it's not obvious. It's like, it's
mean,
like.
Even before quantization.
Yeah. No, but after, it's like a 50-page paper with like huge amount of formulas.
No, before quantization, it's a geometric statement.
Yeah.
And here, the problem is that all these algebras are defined basically by generates, meaning that this algebra, the problem is algebra is defined by generates the relations.
Yes.
Well, it depends on the generates the relations. It's very hard to prove it.
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry,
so
no dependence on R, like.
Sorry? It's all, no matter what R is, it's still quantization. Like maybe, so as an example, so the simplest example to keep in mind is you take G to be SL2 and you take lambda to be 2 and you take mu to be 0, that's M is 1. And then this gr lambda mu is the nilponent cone of SL2. And then y lambda mu depends on two parameters, C1, C2. In this case, this R has size 2. So R is a set with two guys, C1, C2. And it's the universal enveloping algebra of SL2 modulo the Casimir element of SL2 minus some little c, which depends on the c1 and c2. It's something like c1 minus c2 squared minus 1 or something. And so no matter what this c is, this thing is a quantization of nilpotent. OK, so now on to some discussion about symplectic duality, and then discuss about the representation theory of these algebras. So associate to the same data of a lambda and a mu, now with not necessarily dominant mu. So given this lambda and mu, then we can define a Nakajima curve variety. Which I'm going to call M lambda mu. So it's in Nakajima's notation, it's MVW, where W is the sum, is where W is this vector, where WI is what I was calling lambda I, and V is a vector, where VI is what I was calling MI. And okay, so the basic expectation is that M lambda mu is the symplectic dual. Of Gr lambda mu. So I want to explain this, some incarnations of this statement. Yeah?
Have you asked the completion of lambda minus mu in roots or in code? In alpha or in omegas?
MIs? In alphas.
And the mus?
And the lambdas?
In omegas. Right?
In omegas.
But are they mu? Is mu I equal to mi?
This is a V, VI, yeah.
VI,
this is a V.
Is VI
equal to MI, yeah. This is usually the way it works. And right, this guy is the W's. It tells you sort of the highest weight. And this is the V's. It tells you how far you've come down from the highest weight.
But I can't remember if the V's is the position in omegas or in alphas.
Alphas. It's the same as in the. OK, so let me explain. Three sort of aspects of this symplectic duality. So the first is in the forthcoming work of Braverman, Finkelberg, Nakajima. So they construct some. So this M lambda mu can be defined as this Higgs branch. Namely, you start with this T star N. And you take the symplectic, algebraic symplectic reduction by the group product of GLVIs. So this N is some space of affine space of representations of the quiver with framing. I'm not going to really explain this N too carefully. And then from this setup, they construct some big space called Rn. At least they call it Rn. Vesh, I could tell you more about it. And then from Rn, they take the homology of Rn, and this becomes an algebra under a kind of convolution product. And this algebra is supposed to be the Coulomb branch of this theory. In other words, its spec of it should be the spec of this algebra should be the symplectic dual of this. And so this, so they prove, from what I understand in their paper, that in this case it's you do get these guys, that the spec of this algebra is these Gr lambda mu's. And moreover, they construct a non-commutative algebra as well by forming the C star equivariant homology of this space Rn. And in fact, you could say they construct the, they could look at the C star cross the product of the GLWI equivariant homology of this Rn. And this thing, so this is. I'll say a theorem, but I mean, maybe. Well, we did some calculations which seem to show this, that this is isomorphic to this y lambda mu. But I mean, maybe like y lambda mu tilde. So this, I mean, a version of this where those r's, those parameters r, become some variables. And these parameters r are directly related to this, taking this equivariant homology for this group. Yeah, in particular, if you believe these two theorems, it proves that this conjecture. Okay. So that's one reason for thinking about this Seems like a duality.
Did you know how to construct the generators?
Yeah, he knows.
Yeah, it's not very hard. Yeah. And the way to compare this with this is, yeah. So for the generators here, you construct some things here, and then to compare them, you have to we use what's called this GKLO representation of this. Of this thing. So there's this representation of this shifted Yangian called, constructed by Gerasimov, Kharchev, Lebedev, and Oblazin, and we use that to compare these two things. Okay, so a second aspect of this causal duality, or symplectic duality, is this causal duality. So this is in the work of Braden, Lakata, Proudfoot, Webster. So they formulated some general approach, general kind of setup for symplectic duality. So in particular, in this situation, their setup would give rise to the following conjecture. So that there is a causal duality. Between the following two categories. So one is category O for the quantization of this Nakajima core variety. And the second would be a category O for this algebra's y lambda mu r. So let me explain a couple of things. So category O, let me explain the category at least on this side. So this algebra y lambda mu r has a natural sort of positive part. So this is the subalgebra generated by all these guys, EISs. And this, well, I don't want to make a precise definition of this side. But let's say roughly, this should be the category of modules of n mu r modules where this guy, positive stuff, acts locally nilpotently. So on the other hand, this category O has been defined quite rigorously in this work and in subsequent work by Ben Webster. In particular, one thing that Webster has shown, building on work of Zhang, Rouquet, others, is that if you take the direct sum of all these category O's, so this thing by definition is this, I take the direct sum over all mu's, so now I really need to use mu not necessarily dominant to get a good statement here. So this direct sum carries a categorical action. Categorical action of the Lie algebra G. So what that means is, yeah. Here it should be actually on the abelian categories, but here it will be on the drive categories. So what that means?
This will go out by definition both.
Sorry?
This will go out by definition also both drive categories.
That's true. So in particular. Like what this means is you have some functors from the drive category of this category O to another drive category where I've increased the mu by alpha I. So it's the effect of the EI. So functors EIs and FIs corresponding to the generators of this Lie algebra G. So this has been studied extensively by Ben Webster. And one idea for proving this conjecture is to construct here a categorical G action. So if we can construct the action, it sort of will allow us to compare these two sides.
I think category is actually built.
This one?
I mean, you need the next grade, right, for this validity to work.
Yeah, so that's also true. Yeah, we don't have that at the moment. Yeah,
so before, I mean, there's the actually, the transcendent can act on, right?
Yeah, that's true. So technically, this would be, because it does between some graded lift of this category and this one. But this one, I think it does.
Well, it's very not very, I mean, it has this mixed hodge modules or something like that.
Well, I think in Ben's work, he proves. I think there's a more elementary definition that Ben proves that this category is equivalent to some modules over some algebras. These algebras define diagrammatic algebras. And I think from that definition, you can.
But that's almost the point of this algebra. Like when you have this functor CI, so this is there's supposed to be kind of exact functors with respect to the triangulated functors in derived categories. But the question is, how do they behave with respect to extra green? So, if they don't respect extra green, then I don't know how to carry them over to the dual side, because the dual side is the two gradings are going to be changed. And then the functors you will be getting will not be sort of T. Will not be triangulated functors. So the question is that clear that you should expect them to be? Right? Like, I mean, if they're not exact and derived categories, that basically is how we can construct them. Right?
Yeah, no, I think that they will be. Yeah.
So, but that means that this Benz conference should preserve the other gradient as well.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm not, I don't know.
It's a formal question.
Yeah, no, anyway, but I'm not an expert on this part, so I don't want to. I don't want to speculate. Okay, so, but anyway, the thing I sort of want to advertise about this, well, besides the fact that we have expecting this because of duality, is that we're expecting this categorical G action, but we have no idea really how to construct it. Mm-hmm. And in particular, in order to make sense of it, you really would like to use mu's, not necessarily dominant mu. So this idea of how to define it for not necessarily dominant mu, it's only pretty recently. Well, I only read your paper like a few months ago. So maybe with the maybe that gives some more ideas for what to do here.
I mean, intuitively, the definition is complex, but it's really more standard, mostly because of solutions of some Bogomolian equations.
Yeah, this one here.
You can do that, right?
Yeah.
You get time to define ways to map the space into another while changing mu, right, and not changing lambda. Changing the
model
now, right?
It's not both, not just changing the
model. I mean, you're doing the singularity one as the same.
Formally, so if the lambda equals to zero.
Yes. Yeah, let's start with that.
But you want.
Yeah, I know.
And that is true because you want also mu to be sort of inside the Cronius power of the double order.
But
he's saying that you
like to
extend
it to
general. All right, but
well,
it's dominant, but the point is that somehow you want mu to be a weight of the representation of high space lambda, for example.
Yes.
Of five-dimensional position. So if lambda is zero, then only mu equal to zero. Although the space is defined for all mu, which are less equal to zero, but only mu equal to zero will be open.
Somehow, I don't think they'll contribute to this kind of. I'm not sure what they'll look.
I mean, when you say it takes summation over all mu.
Yeah, this is only mu's. Well, on this side, this space only is.
You're trying to build interesting correspondences, right?
Yeah, so I actually do know an interesting correspondence. But it wasn't going to be part of my talk. But I would be interested to understand more about this. But there is an interesting correspondence between this guy and this guy. And the way it works is like this, that you can define an action of the additive group, so just of C, on Gur lambda mu. Roughly speaking, like an element A here will act by something like xi of A, so it's like a matrix which is like this. I don't have any notes about this, tell me. But roughly speaking, there is a way to have an action of C on this Gur lambda mu, like this.
Yes.
And this map is Hamiltonian. It's a moment map for this action. And maybe we're going to call it mu, phi or something. Yeah, I would be interested to understand if there's some physics interpretation. Maybe I should, another day I'll come back and
it's not physics, really.
Or math. Math. I would be interested in understanding a math interpretation.
This is a solution of math equations, a good way to produce these things.
Well, I would be happy to understand a math way of understanding this correspondence, too. But you can look at the one level of this moment map, and then it's a conjecture in general, but maybe I know how to prove it in type A, that the quotient of this by this action is this space. Mm-hmm. So that's actually some correspondence, interesting correspondence I do know. I just don't know how to turn this correspondence into a categorical reaction. And I think this does work even when mu is not dominant. I know how to quantize it. Yeah, maybe sometime, well, I'll tell you more about this maybe another time. Okay, so that was maybe some second aspect of the symplectic duality. Now a third aspect of the symplectic duality is it's called Ikeda conjecture, and it's some generalization of it due to Nakajima. So first of all, let me make the following definition. If A is a graded algebra, but graded by the integers, then I can define the B algebra of A, BA, to be A0 mod out by the sum of all A minus I AI. Okay. So I take A0 and I quotient by the sums of all things which are products of a negative guy and a positive guy of opposite weight. Zero. And this is a two-sided ideal in A0. So the quotient is an algebra, even if A is not commutative. If A is commutative, this B algebra sort of admits a kind of algebraic geometry interpretation. If A is commutative, then, well, we have spec A, and we have an action of C star on spec A because of this grading. And then we can take spec A and take its C star fixed subscheme. And this will be spec of the B of A.
Good to know. What you're looking at this. It seemed the right thing to do to get the fixed point, but we have no idea why it would be true.
This is a relatively easy thing to prove.
Especially for the quantum level, too?
Quantum level,
only this side makes sense. I'll discuss the quantum level in a few minutes. Okay, so we have the following theorem. So this is our theorem. So some of these results of mine are, maybe I should attribute it to some co-author. So anything, most of the results, some of the things are due to myself and Peter Tingley and Alex Ben Webster and Alex Weeks and Odette Jacoby. Okay, so the theorem is that in this case, we have that the B algebra of the coordinate ring of Gur lambda mu is isomorphic to the cohomology of the corresponding curve array. So this statement for any symplectic resolution is Hikeda conjecture. So this.
I think
he proved it for the Hilbert scheme, hypertoric varieties, and cotangent bundle of the partial flag varieties in type A. It's actually a pretty good paper. Yeah. So
it's just the cohomology of the manifold on that inside.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, as algebras.
As algebras.
Ah. Ooh.
As graded algebras.
Intuitively, this left-hand side is meant to talk about the fixed point.
Yeah, but except the
exactly
variation is maybe implicitly consistent because here you mean the equivariety, which is, you mean like the smooth equivariety, the resolution, which I think it over there was probably.
No, it was always the smooth one.
I mean, we're trying to intuitively wanted to look at this. This is not the quantized, right?
Yeah. I'll explain about the significance of the quantized one in a second.
So it is difficult to think about it as fixed.
Well, the
function for the fixed points. Is there some sort of Morse theory here? Because
the function is mostly the algebra function is mostly
getting
from
the bottom. Yeah, that's right. So the left hand side is just functions of
that. I mean,
then the spectrum of the left hand side. So it might sort of build in a cohomology of
them. Yeah, but it's a cohomology of a different space, right?
Yeah, but the fixed points aren't
corresponding. Yeah.
But actually, typically on the web, you're going to have one fixed point.
Yeah. I mean,
but
this is.
You resolve it.
No, you don't resolve it.
It's not resolved.
Excellent.
This is a C6 sub scheme.
Sorry.
It's a little weird. So this is some algebra, which is some its spec of it is just consists of one reduced point.
Yes.
So it's some thick thing because there's actually only one fixed C star fixed point. But it has some structure, which is this cohomology. But it's also true.
So this is also
the usual cohomology.
The usual cohomology of the
non-reduced
space.
On
the right hand side, it's resolved, and it's a quivariety, and here it's.
I think physically we are turning on masses and not the high parameters.
No, there are no masses. Masses will case one invariant.
Sorry.
Masses
will case turning on high parameters and
not
masses.
Okay, we're going to. Okay, so now we're about to come to the equivariant cohomology, though. So,
not concentrated
at
zero.
Oh, sorry. This grading, this is a little bit confusing. This algebra has two different gradings. One grading, I should have said this. This space has, let me back up 1 second. I need a little bit of space here. Yeah, I know. Yeah. So this space has a C star action, which I told you about at the beginning, coming from C star acting on P1. And this C star only has positive gradings, not negative gradings. That's not the C star I'm taking. On the other hand, this same space has the action of the torus T of G. So this is the torus of my group G. And I choose some C star into this torus. And the choice of this C star into here is the same as the choice of there was a choice here, which I sort of suppressed, which is the choice of the GIT parameter for defining this GIT quotient here. And I should choose the same sort of this guy to match that one. And so after I take this fixed points here, or this B algebra thing, this thing will still have a grading coming from the other C star. So this thing had two different gradings. Well, it had one sort of T action and one the C star action. So still has the other grading, and that's the grading which matches this grading. So now.
So maybe it makes sense to make a general remark that usually, I don't know if you should expect this as a theorem, but more or less what should be true is that when it's expected to go out of the should have a resolution on one side, mm-hmm. and only from the other side there's an action of a torus with finitely made at 6 points. So that's exactly what. And then this conjecture, in this general, this conjecture makes sense. So that would take this resolution and make this cohomology, and on the other side you lose this edge where it comes as other.
And so, this things will work even if mu is not nominal.
Oh, that's an interesting point. We were just talking about last week. So the proof of this is very indirect, not so straightforward, and it should still work if mu is not dominant. But in particular, the right-hand side is sort of independent of mu. In fact, the quivariety itself is independent of. Under the Weyl group. So if you have some Weyl group orbit of your quivariety, the quivariety is just isomorphic. So its cohomology is just isomorphic. So then the hard part would be to show the left hand, this thing very much does depend on mu. Even if you apply a Weyl group element, it gets much bigger. So the hard part is to show sort of that this thing is independent.
Yeah, but near the fixed points, it doesn't. So if you look
exactly
at it,
what I tried to check was 15 minutes. But if this 15 minutes were not enough, then prove this. But that really should be.
Yeah, in this 15-minute session, I convinced myself that it should be true. So, yeah, that it should be true even when Mu is not down. But yeah, that's not. I didn't try to check it too good. Okay, so now let's make a.
There's actually a physics statement, conjecture, that is the case that the Coulomb branch, if you do a wire transformation on Mu,
yeah,
the Coulomb branch. Of course, the dimension changes, but it changes by just by adding a bunch of flat stuff near the fixed points.
Yeah, I guess that's maybe that's roughly what we sort of tried to say. Okay, so let's let R be a choice of parameters, as before, but let me just choose them to be integral. So before the parameters were any complex numbers, but it turns out to be kind of most interesting to have integral parameters. Yeah.
Do you think there's some sort of elliptic cohomology backend for this?
Elliptic cohomology?
Yes.
Why?
Or
I don't know anything about elliptic cohomology, so.
Well, I mean, intuitively, a way to get this sort of cohomology is like ground states of quantum mechanics or something like that. These are three-dimensional theories. The way to get the quantum mechanics is to put them on a torus. But then I think if the torus is finite size, it will get an elliptic cohomology or something like that. I don't know.
Okay, so now let's let R be some choice of integral parameters. And so we using this integral parameters, we define this y lambda mu r. And now let's do something on the other side. So we'll use the same integral parameters to define us a map from C star into the product of these GLWIs. So this group, this thing that I guess you call the flavor group. So these are the GL of the framing vertices. And that comes from this choice of integral parameters. I mean, choose a basis, and then the C star is just according to this parameters. And then this gives an action of C star on the quiver variety. Well, that's defined in the following way. You combine together this thing is acting on the quiver variety, and also C star is acting by just scaling all the arrows of the quiver variety, and combining those together gives you an action of C star on the quiver variety. So this action depends on this R. So then we have following. So this thing is what, I learned of this statement from Nakajima, so I call it Nakajima's conjecture. So it's a modification of this Ikeda conjecture. So we take the B algebra of the non-commutative guy, and it should be isomorphic to this equivariant cohomology of M lambda mu. And moreover, there's this not just some isomorphism, but there's some this isomorphism should be compatible with the following thing. So we take polynomials in these infinitely many variables, HIS, or maybe I'll call it AIS. So I have these AISs, these are some elements in my, well, there's some AIS, I mean, let me just make some symbols, AIS, and I have a polynomial ring in these infinitely many symbols. And I define a map like this. So this map just takes AIS to AIS, which is an element in the degree zero part of this algebra, so therefore it gives me an element in this B algebra. And then I define it this way. In this way, I take AIS to the S Chern class of the vector bundle VI. So this conjecture is that there's an isomorphism algebra that's compatible with these two maps like this.
Do you know if I ever proved that the left-hand side is commutative?
In what setting? I mean, particularly for this y lambda mu's?
Yes.
Yeah. In general, if you have an arbitrary, and I think if you have an arbitrary symplectic resolution, whatever, it's not necessarily commutative.
But the algebra A0 itself is not.
It's not. Yeah. Probably not. In fact, I mean, not only is this thing commutative, this map is surjective. So it's not obvious. It's not obvious that this map is surjective, but it is.
But for the right hand side, you know also.
This is also a surjective.
This kernel surjective.
Yeah. Which is known for finite type quiver varieties. Yeah. Okay, now let me explain the significance of this B algebra of Y lambda mu R. Well, at least significance for me. So we're interested in the following problem is to classify the Verma modules.
That's right. So they're going to be idempotents of B.
Characters are. Yeah. You're one step ahead of me. So let me explain this. So what do I mean by this? So first of all, let me just describe Verma modules for Y mu. So given some sequence J is Ji, and each Ji is some power series in U inverse, constant term 1, then we can define Mj, so this is a Verma module for Y mu, and it's going to be generated by a vector V naught and subject to the relations that EIS of V naught is 0 for all I and S, and HIS of V 0 is the coefficient of U to the S and J about JIS. No. So AIs was defined from H's by some formula which I didn't write down. But the definition depends on the R. That's the part I think you need to know about. Maybe it's simpler just to write AI here. Since I'm not really being very, doesn't really matter from the point of view of what I'm writing. And then we can let so this is a module for Y mu, and then we can use it to construct a module for Y lambda mu, MJR. So I'd take Y lambda mu R tensor over Y mu with this MJ. So this will be a Verma module for these. But this is typically, this will be 0. So this is non-zero for only finitely many J's. And so I think what you were saying a few minutes ago is the following statement.
When you try this B, so this structure was a generic choice of parameters, yes? Or
not necessarily generic.
Well, I think you do want it to be generic otherwise, because you want this resolution, this symplectic quotient without a sign to be smooth otherwise. I mean, you can formally define it always, of course, but somehow you probably want, I mean, for this conjecture to make sense.
No. The parameters. The you need the C star.
Yeah, the C star you picked was generic. Yes.
Ah, this C star is generic, yeah. Sorry, this C star is generic, yeah. Basically, it's just one, acting with weight 1 on, I mean, it's just sort of the natural C star. Acting by weight 1 on the EIs and minus 1 on the FIs.
Yeah, but then you can.
Yeah, you can mess.
Yeah,
but yeah, it should be generic, yes.
But you
can
probably change the chamfer.
Yeah, I guess if it wasn't generic, this B algebra would get too big.
Well, it would be.
Well, maybe it would be interesting to do that. I didn't think about it.
It would be the algebra of a smaller y, I think.
A what? A smaller y. What?
Well, okay, so here there is the algebra which gives you just a sum of finite components, right? But in the modular case, you might get a sum of y algebras instead of a sum of finite components.
Ah.
Sort of a quantum
I see. Okay. Okay, so in other words, saying the same thing is this J defines a map from this polynomial ring in infinitely many variables, AISs, to C, okay, which just takes AIS to JIS. And so, and here's the lemma. So part one of the lemma is that this Verma module is non-zero if and only if this map J factors to the B algebra. B of Y lambda mu R. Okay, so this Y lambda mu R, there's the map that I just mentioned over there. And it's surjective. Oops. In particular, this algebra is commutative. So that the
semi-classical limit of this taken size. You can think of the Verma modules as complex Lagrangians of manifolds.
Yeah.
And the adimportance of V as fixed points. And the highest weight vector is like a fixed point.
Yeah.
And the Lagrangian manifolds flow down. They're like the timbres.
Yeah. All right, and the second fact is that if...
Is this lemma easier?
Not very hard, no.
I mean, you call it a lemma.
It just basically uses the... It's not hard, no. It uses the basically the PBW theorem for Y mu. That's like the main ingredient. Okay. So the second part is that if this guy is non-zero, there exists some polynomial pi of u, monic of degree mi. This is also not hard, the second part, such that this ai of u, so I never introduced this notation, but ai of u just means the series made in the usual way, A, I, S, U to the minus S, 1 plus S. Okay, then A, I of U acting on V0 will be U to the MI, U to the minus MI, U to the MI times this, U to the minus MI times this polynomial PI of U, V0. And so the this highest sort of the J, we're going to sort of re-encode in using this polynomial, or precisely the roots of this polynomial. So we get a subset. Get a multiset. Si, the roots. Yeah. Okay.
The nice old Verma modules is a bimodule for BA and A, for BY and Y.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Do you think it has a simple description? We can't remember.
This is pretty, this is studied in you know, this BLPW paper.
Uh-huh.
They study this pretty intensively, this B algebra, for an arbitrary symplectic resolution.
Okay.
So I don't know what all the results are, but this is exactly the kind of approach that they look at in that paper, so you might be interested. Okay, so on the other hand, so that's sort of a discussion of why this guy is interesting. So basically what we've shown here is that if we look at the spec of this B algebra, or more precisely, spec of the C points of this B algebra, C points of spec of this B algebra, that this will be the highest weights possible. This sort of parameterizes possible highest weights for Y lambda mu R. Now let's look on the other side. So if we take this equivariant, C star equivariant cohomology of M lambda mu, this will be the same thing as the cohomology of the C star fixed point set in M lambda mu. And this C star fixed point set is what Nakajima calls a graded quiver variety. And so spec of this thing. Cohomology of the C star fixed point set. Maybe to be a little bit more precise here, this thing looks like a different beast because I have C star covariant cohomology of point acting here. So maybe I really mean C star covariant cohomology specialized at H equals 1. I can also do that. But for some reason that I want to do the other one. And then I can just write ordinary cohomology here. That's I prefer to do it this way. So then I can just have ordinary cohomology. And so ordinary cohomology of space, spec of it, or spec of the C points of spec of it is just a set of connected components of the space. Because you just get some little ring at each point of the space, the cohomology of that connected component. And so we're interested in the connected components of this quiver variety. And these connected components of this graded quiver variety have already been studied extensively by Nakajima. So the following instruction of Nakajima. So suppose that given a point x bar, say, in M lambda mu C star. So x bar, x is in the bar refers to the quotient by GLV. So there exists some unique map from C star into the product of the GL of VIs such that, let's have rho, such that T acting on X, so this is T is in the C star, this is the action used to find the C star fixed points, this will have to equal rho of T acting on X, okay? In such a way that i.e. T acting on X bar should equal X bar and sort of this rho is sort of compensating for that thing. So rho of T is this thing which is acting here by the action that's defining the quotient. Okay, so that's, and moreover this rho is sort of constant on this pi zero of the greater thing, and it determines the connected components. Mm-hmm. So rho gives us a collection of multisets. You just look at the weight that this C star is, so this is the same, this map rho is the same as an action of C star on these different vector spaces. And so you just look at the weights of that action. That gives you a collection of multisets. Let me call it sort of SI primed.
So you can connect the points around by its weight.
So most choices of this thing will be empty, but there exists.
Do you know which?
Yeah. So there's a combinatorial description of which ones are non-empty, which is basically a theorem of Nakajima. So this gives you a bijection between this a zero of this thing, as in bijection, but via this construction with something called product monomial crystal. So it's something completely defined combinatorially. So this is some combinatorial object. So let me call this B So the name of this combinatorial object can be write B lambda R mu. Okay.
I think B is not good.
Yeah, I was worried about that. Okay, let me call it
C.
Okay, C for crystal. For some reason B is usually for crystal, but. You know, I learned about crystals from you. Okay, so this guy. And so this is basically the theorem of Nakajima. So it gives you a combinatorial description of these connected components. So on the other hand, as I mentioned, we get these multisets, the same kind of data. The size of this SI should be MI because the polynomial is of degree MI. So the same kind of data comes from this side. So the conjecture is that the multisets produced by highest weights of when of mu are those in this C lambda R mu. So this conjecture is equivalent in the language of this conjecture. It's a little bit weaker than this conjecture. It's just telling you that this conjecture holds on the level of C points. So this conjecture is implied by this conjecture, but it's equivalent to this.
It's weaker.
Yeah. Well, but for generic values in this R, it's easy to see that these things are all reduced. So for generic values, it's the same. Well, maybe it's not that easy to see. For generic values of R, they should be reduced, so then it's the same. So this conjecture on level of C points. I mean, takes back and then takes C points. OK, so this conjecture is true in type A. Not directly. Somehow we need them at one stage in the argument. But most of the argument, well, we tried to prove it by as much general kind of machinery as, like, not type A specific machinery as possible. So that allows you to get a lot of the way towards the conjecture, even in the general type. And then somehow at the end, there's some part where you really need to do some stuff, which we only know because of. Maybe not so much because of W algebras. We know it more because of some facts about GLN Yang.
So this should be generalization with this sister action is not generic.
The C star action, you mean the one that was used to define the B algebra?
Yes.
That's quite possible.
Well, you get.
Yeah.
For instance, what would you like to say if the C star action is to be the algebra is the same as the original algebra? Maybe there is a statement, but
it's just a question. I would say that someone said it. I would say that there are simplistic dual pairs on the side. So
yeah.
I think B would consist of some sort of Y algebra, simpler Y algebra. And on the right hand side, there would be.
Oh, but if you make the actual engineering, the B algebra becomes bigger, not smaller.
This side.
So somehow, so what would be the statement if this is the right
algebra? No, I'm saying that this algebra is the sum of Y.
So, who is the sum of Y's?
This B of Y will be a sum of simpler Y.
Not when the C star is trivial. But Sasha
well,
asking where
the C star is trivial, it's just Y itself.
Yeah.
If the C star is, you know, intermediate, it will be sum of Y's. And then on the other side, you will put kind of the. And you said that this is Kozu dual to.
All right, maybe I say one more thing because I need to go in there.
Oh.
I just wanted to say one last thing. So originally, as I said, we wanted to define we wanted to define an action of G on, say, the direct sum of these category O's. So 4 Y lambda mu. Category O, Y lambda mu. R. And what we, well, if you believe this conjecture, then what we've done is we defined a crystal structure. Because this thing is a crystal. So I won't explain what crystal means, but it's some kind of combinatorial version of action of G. So we get a crystal structure on the set of Verma modules for Y lambda mu R. And I can say one interesting thing about this crystal structure. I'll say it now. So the interesting thing is like this, that so if J, so this, maybe one more thing. So ultimately what we would expect is that this K group of this category O's will not be an irreducible representation of G, but will be some representation which sort of contains V lambda and some other stuff and depends on this R. So if R is generic, then the representation will be a direct sum of all tensor product of all the fundamental representations of the sum ends of lambda. And if R is very special, then maybe it's just V lambda. But in particular, it could contain, there could be some hom of from V mu into this representation. And from the general point of view of this Kozul duality, we would expect this would be the K group of the category of finite dimensional Y lambda mu R modules. And we have a little bit of result in that direction, which is the following thing. So if, I didn't really set up enough notation to state this very well, but MJR is a Verma module such that it's killed in the crystal structure by all these EIs. So this is something to do with this combinatorial structure. If it's killed by all these EIs, then maybe I should say this if and only if. If and only if this thing has a finite dimensional quotient. So that's sort of kind of like this statement, but on this crystal level.
And this is the theorem.
And that's the theorem. No, I only know how to define it. Well, the slightly more precise statement is I know how to define a map from this Verma modules to this product monomial crystal in any G. I know how to define the map. I don't know how to prove, in type A, I know how to prove that map is an isomorphism by ejection. For any G, I know how to define such a map. And the statement is really if the EI of the image of that guy is there. So this kind of a supposed to be a suggestion that everything fits together. Well, because there's a very easy criteria in terms of this Dürrenfeld polynomial criteria for when this is true. So that criteria turns out to be very close to, maybe surprisingly related to this, but it is. The proof of this theorem is just a few lines. Easy combinatorial exercise. Well, there's like one page of work to extend this Dürrenfeld criteria to the shifted Jungians. Maybe even two pages. There's a little bit non-trivial work there, but then once you have that, it's easy.
Maybe it's more a question to you, but do you know if there's a way to extend this conjecture to quantum level? So that on the right, you get one homology. If I want to write one homology on the right, what should I write on the left? Resolution, what's the assumption? Instead of this B algebra, what should I do? But there should be an answer on the little side.
Maybe equal happy, right?
Maybe what?
Maybe equal happy.